Hey friends, welcome to another episode of A to Z with Nikki Lee. I'm Nikki Lee, your curious host. In today's episode, we're going to talk about a really important issue here in Arizona, here in the Southwest, and even out to the West. We're talking about water. We're going to talk about where our water comes from, some of the challenges that we're facing regarding water in Arizona in the future, and what's happening in the legislature around water this year. Our guest today is Kristen Randall. Kristen is a water scientist here in Tucson, Arizona, specializing in groundwater, particularly along the Colorado River. She also works with other water scientists to communicate their studies to the public. And she happens to be an LD10er. She lives here in the district, so added bonus. All right, let's go ahead and jump right in and learn all about water. So Kristen, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in regard to water?
Yeah, I'm a water scientist in Arizona. I work in Tucson and we study availability. We study water quality. We use isotopes. We do really exciting things. I've been able to go on a river trip down the Grand Canyon to do sediment studies. And sometimes I'm out in the 120 degree heat getting water levels in wells in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty exciting.
It is. It's wonderful. I love
it. Yeah. That's amazing. You know, I think a lot of people like myself in the past have been so unconscious as to water issues. You know, we turn on our faucet, we go jump in the shower, and we just expect water to come out. We really don't and don't have any idea where it comes from or, you know, any concerns about water. But in the Southwest, in Arizona, we have a real big issue around water. So can you kind of tell us maybe where our water even comes from? And
right, yeah. It depends where you are. But here in Tucson, we know through different isotope studies that we've done that primarily the water in the ground comes from the mountains. We're able to use isotope studies to find out what the elevation of the recharge is. So we know that a lot of it comes from Mount Lemmon. Now, though, if you turn on your tap and you're here in Tucson, depending on where you are in Tucson, some of that water might also come from the CAP, the Central Arizona Project. That water is Colorado River water. So we have these different mixtures of water here. It's really, really interesting.
So how does the Central Arizona Project work for those who haven't been exposed to that? What is the Central Arizona Project?
Well, the Central Arizona Project is, it's basically a big canal, and it brings water from the Colorado River at the Bill Williams Refuge all the way to Tucson, where it ends. There's some discussions about having it go all the way to Green Valley at some point. I don't know what the timetable is on that. The act that allowed that to happen was signed in 1968, and the construction of the CAP was finished in 1994. That's a lot of time there.
Yeah. It was a
very difficult project, really hard to construct, really hard to get it so that all the different water users signed on to it. But basically, the three lower Colorado River states, Nevada, Arizona, and California, each had a federal government allotment of Colorado River water. Arizona was not using its entire allotment because most of our users are not along the river. So they wanted to have this canal that would bring water into Central Arizona so that we would be able to use our allotment.
All right. So what are some of the risks to cap water availability in the future, in the near future specifically?
Yeah, well, one of the things that happens, when Arizona proposed that they wanted to construct the CAP, what it did is it, one of the things they had to agree to was for the automatic shutoffs to hit the CAP first. What that is if Lake Mead goes below a certain level during a time of drought, then all of a sudden these allocations to the states will get shut down or limited. So Arizona, because they were given permission to build the CAP, they had to be the first ones to get those cuts. If the lake elevation of Lake Mead goes below 1,070 feet, then the CAP starts to get shut down. And we've gotten pretty close. At the end of the year in 2016, we were at 1,075.
Wow.
Yeah. We've gotten really close before. There were other times. I used to track it. We got to 1,072 once. Now they can equalize the lakes and bring in more water from Lake Powell. But we're closer than we've been in a very long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what would happen then? I mean, how would that affect our state?
Yeah, well, if CAP water gets limited or shut down, that means it's not getting delivered to the farmers, to the municipalities, to the people that depend on it. That's a big economic impact, and that's a big impact to Phoenix and Tucson for people who use that water.
Definitely. Wow. All right. So what are maybe some other water concerns in addition to availability that we should know about here in the Tucson or Arizona area in general?
I would say one of the concerns that I would probably like to see more study on and more people talking about is land subsidence. I think a lot of people do know that land has subsided in Tucson. There's areas in like southeast Tucson where it's pretty visible. There's been damage to homes and to bridges and to roads. One of the things though, that there's a good thing in that the subsidence has mostly stopped in Tucson. In some areas it's actually started to come back a little bit because of the CAP water recharging the aquifer. These areas are now seeing subsidence of up to 6 inches a year. And this is a problem because you're talking about increased erosion, topsoil loss, and once again, we're talking about a big economic impact.
You mentioned some of the levels in the past that you've seen as you've been looking at that. And I know there's a lot of other states that draw off of the same resources, right? In the Colorado River, Lake mm-hmm. Mead.
Yep.
So, I mean, it seems so interconnected with other states.
Yeah.
So what are we doing, I guess, at a state level to do our part to help conserve and protect Lake Mead and the Colorado River?
Well, we in the last few decades, the population in the lower Colorado River states, and those states are Arizona, Nevada, and California, has increased by 55%.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
But we've cut our water usage by 40%.
Collectively, all the states?
Yes.
Wow.
So we've done a really good job with that.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, we're in a period of drought. Lake Mead, we're pulling out more than what's going in. So this is still an issue. I think that right now there is a binational committee. It's made up of Mexico and the states. And within the states, we're talking about federal. So Senator Flake is on this commission. And state users and even down to local irrigation districts are all on this committee. And they're trying to come up with plans moving forward. Right now, Lake Mead hits an elevation. You get these shutoffs. Arizona takes the hit. Nevada takes some hits. California actually doesn't at all. When it reaches these drought levels, California does not have their allocation limited in any way.
Is that just because of how they negotiated the mm-hmm. deals? Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So what this new plan would do is Arizona would still take the worst of the allocation hits. But for the first time ever, California would have to take some too. Hmm. And so obviously it's not super popular in California.
I bet.
And actually all of the users, so all of the three states and Mexico would all reduce their usage somewhat. And then there would be incentives given to any user who banks their amount of water in Lake Mead. So you would get a benefit to keeping water in the lake. Now, it's a great plan. Obviously, there's a lot of things that need to be worked out. Last I read about it was a few weeks ago, and it's been stalled for about 3 months. Obviously, it's really hard to get everybody in a room and to agree on things, especially mm-hmm. when we're talking about cutting allocations, and it's difficult, but I hope they get a move on it.
I hope so too. So I read that agriculture is a very large consumer of mm-hmm. the water coming in. But from a residential perspective, for people that are listening, what can we do, you know, to directly reduce or help out with this issue?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of these common sense things. So change all of your faucets and plumbing to low flow. That makes a big difference. A toilet bowl that might leak and constantly run, that could be thousands of gallons of water per year. So check your plumbing, make sure it's tight. If you water plants, water them at night. Put things on a drip system, put things on soaker hoses. These small things make a huge difference.
I didn't even think about watering at night. Is that just so you don't get the evaporation during the day or something?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is so cool. I never even thought about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's actually better for the plants too. Because if you set and setting timers is my favorite thing to do. Everything's on an irrigation system because I hate having to water stuff.
Yes.
But I have it on a timer. And I'll usually set it for about an hour or two after the sun goes down. So you let the land surface kind of cool down first. Cools down pretty quickly here in the desert. Set your timer for a few hours after that. And then the water will, because it's not evaporating, it kind of sits there for longer and the plants are able to take it up over a longer amount of time than if you were to water during the day.
Very interesting. Yeah. That's a good tip. It's a very good tip.
Yeah.
I guess one thing would be if people want to know more or they're really interested in what we talked about and they want to dig a little deeper, how could they do that?
Well, I mean, the U of A has great programs. Federally, the Bureau of Reclamation, U.S. Geological Survey. They're a non-regulatory research branch of the government. On a state level, ADWR. Is a great resource.
And what does that stand for?
It's the Arizona Department of Water Resources. Okay. And they have everything from their monitoring wells. So you might have a monitoring well in your area where you could check the historical water data and see what's happening to the water table right near your house. In recent years, the state has not been putting as much money into science as they have and as other states are. So unfortunately, a lot of these monitoring wells and these stream gauges are not online anymore. Yeah. So if you have one near you, check it out. It's really wonderful. If you want one, I say contact the state and make it a priority. Say, I'm really interested in monitoring. Those data are kind of like money in the bank a little bit. We can't get them back. If we are not actively collecting those data, you can't use it in 10 years because it's just not there.
Yeah.
These data they're powerful because they help guide our decisions. So that's a great resource. And then there's other nonprofits that are a great resource too for if you want to get more involved.
Perfect. And you may have touched on this a little bit, but is there anything in this upcoming legislative session or anything policy-wise in Arizona that we should be aware of or look out for regarding water?
I'm sticking with well, there's two things. The first one we kind of already discussed is the one with that binational agreement. Mm-hmm. This is really important. I don't know how it's going to go. I know what the state wants, and I know that when this is passed, it'll be a great benefit for all of the water users, especially not more than anybody else, but Arizona really needs this deal to go through. But everybody does. Everybody stands to gain. There's another policy issue, and I don't know if there's a specific piece of legislation on it, but I was reading about it, and I kind of talked about this. In the 1980s, the state of Arizona made a groundwater act where we would monitor and regulate our groundwater resources. This was an extremely forward-thinking piece of legislation at the time, and it's done a lot to ensure that we've had groundwater moving forward. Some areas, especially rural areas, decided that they didn't want to be part of this. Part of the legislation was what's known as the AMAs, or the active management areas. Tucson is in one. Green Valley is in one. There's a few upstate. And there's been demonstrable benefits to these areas that are in the AMAs. Some of these other areas didn't want to be in them. And we talked about that. And I understand their concerns. At a state level now, because the differences between these non-AMA areas and these AMA areas is so great, they're starting to talk about wanting to make these rural areas kind of bring them into the AMA system. And I don't know if they would call it an AMA or something different, but there is talk at a state level of doing that. Even among Republicans who don't usually like the term regulation, they've been talking about that. And I don't know if the governor is totally on board, but he has signaled that he sees something like that favorably.
That's great. I mean, water is something that affects everybody, party, you know, one way or the other. So that's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. Arizona has done a good job of managing that. You think about a state like California only just signed some kind of groundwater regulation to go into effect in, I think it's 2021 when it would go into effect. And we've been doing it since the 80s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very
cool. We can pat ourselves on the back for that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Sometimes we kind of, when we think about science and we think about environmental issues, we always think about doom and gloom and we find out these horrible things. But really, this science will give us the information we need to make things better. So here in Tucson, there is a Superfund site under the, it's like in South Tucson. It's under the airport.
It's under the airport?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the plume is further out now, but it was under TIA. Anyway, so this plume of contaminants was in an area where there was a well field that supplied water to the western portion of the city. So they knew about this. They found out about it. They put in scrubbers. They tested the water, and this is back in the, I think it was like the early 90s, and it looked like they were cleaning out everything they needed to. Great, the water is fine. So they pipe it to West Tucson. People are drinking it. Well, the science got better, and our testing for these toxins in water became better, and we found out that actually there was some bad stuff still in the water. Because we were able to find it. We weren't able to see it before. So because of this science, because of this monitoring, because science got better, we saw those and we were able to have really special treatment plants set up. And, you know, now the water is fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
People ask me sometimes like, well, is the science just going to get better? And then you're going to find out that there's more bad stuff in it. That's always possible, mm-hmm. but we can find concentrations of contaminants in a sample so far below what the dangerous thresholds are for health that I don't think it'll be a problem.
Mm-hmm. But that just reinforces the need to invest in science and appreciate that because I agree. I think it'll just get better and better and be a really valuable asset for us.
Yeah. And in the meantime, we are not we, not me, but because of this science, because of this project, they're cleaning up the water and reinjecting it back into the aquifer. So not only are they making sure that the water is good for people drinking it, but they are actually cleaning it up out of the environment.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good story.
That is a good story. I love a good story. Hey guys, I hope you learned a lot from my conversation with Kristen, and I hope you got some ideas of things you can do to reduce your water consumption and help to be a part of the solution to some of the water issues that we're facing in the near future. So please make sure and tune in next week as we dig into education, specifically talking about teachers. We'll be talking to Katie Rogerson from Tucson Values Teachers, so you definitely don't want to miss that next episode. Until next time, keep growing, keep going, and lead with love.